Save big money on everything at Menards. Take control of your outdoor space with Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. The Pump and Go container is ready and easy to use. With the Pump and Go sprayer, you don't need to mix your own liquid, and you get up to 10 minutes of continuous spray. Save big on Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. Plus, check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Murder in the Morning from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hey, so Mr. Brian Koberger, we're presenting probably one of the weakest alibis in history, I think. And we're going to put a little context to this today because we're going to go through five other ridiculous alibis in history. And I think Koberger stands right up to it. Maybe not as in detail in terms of extremes or grandiose, but just as ridiculous. What was your reaction when you heard that his alibi was officially, "I like to drive at night"?
I laughed. Little pull the curtain back for everybody. You were out of town, so I was kind of holding down things, and that came in, and you sent it to me like, "Hey, can you take care of this?" And I went, "I like to drive at night. Are you kidding me?"
I know.
Oh my God. Okay. Sure you do. And I didn't go into a lot of detail because I knew we'd cover it this week. I think it's absurd. I know people who like to, you know, they get up in the middle of the night, they can't sleep. Maybe they'll exercise. Maybe they'll go down to the kitchen and maybe make some cookies. Maybe they will go for a drive. But
you just happen to be also, going. Go ahead.
They're not driving past a place where four people have been murdered multiple times back and forth. And there's just, okay, fine. If you claim that's your alibi, it's not real good.
I don't even know why they're even providing one, because number one, you don't have to provide an alibi. And if this is what they're going to be, you have to provide it if you're going to argue it in court. That's why they're providing it. But if they're not going to provide it, then they just can't go to an alibi defense when it comes time for the trial. So the fact that they're providing this ludicrous alibi right now is very much telling that this is going to be their defense point. This is their main point, or at least one of them. "I like to drive at night with nothing, and there's no one that can confirm it. There's no cameras anywhere that could, like, there's got to be a gazillion cameras out there. If he's out there driving at night, that could have corroborated this. The problem with it now is if they go back and try and find that data, it's going to be gone.
Yeah.
The video history.
And what they're doing is they're providing just enough of a shadow of a doubt to potential jurors that if he likes to drive at night and he was driving at night and they have proof he was driving at night, that doesn't necessarily mean that he murdered anybody, does it? There's your reasonable doubt.
There's plenty of dumbass reasonable doubts in here, but I don't even know what to say. Everyone at the beginning was like, "Ann Taylor really has her shit together. She really seems to be doing a good strategy." And we're all kind of like waiting for it to come together and culminate. Like, "Oh, she's got something brewing here. I'm really excited to see what it is. He likes to drive at night." Are you fucking serious? Like, this is the, like, and at the end of the day, you know, I don't want to bash Ann Taylor too much, because at the end of the day, whatever is being said has to be approved by Koberger. So that means Koberger is probably really in the driver's seat on a lot of this. And I'm going to guess going against counsel's advice. That would be,
you think so?
Yeah, 100%. I don't think a lot of this is the work of Ann Taylor. She has a track record of being a very competent attorney. This doesn't sound like her work. This sounds like an attorney who is assigned to the case. And ultimately, she has to do what the client wants. And the client is saying, "Tell him that." And an arrogant narcissist like Koberger, that we think he is going to think, "Oh, that's a legitimate excuse. People are just going to have to accept it because my word is golden." And, you know, they have this self-aggrandized view of themselves that they don't necessarily realize how ludicrous the things they are that they're saying.
Interesting.
But that's my opinion.
I think also, though, it really it makes people look at this and just like I did, chuckle. And that's not what you should be doing in this case. You shouldn't be laughing at this alleged alibi. It needs to be something plausible and serious. Mm-hmm. And is he still, I mean, obviously he's in jail, but before he was in jail, was he out driving? Well, Does anybody know this about him?
Well, my joke the other week was when they were not quite giving an alibi, which is about the same alibi that they eventually gave, was that he wasn't at the home at the time of those murders. He wasn't there.
Okay, well, now he kind of is.
Okay, and now you've placed him on the route, because I said, well, what are they going to say? Because he's clearly has his cell phone pinging in these areas. Mm-hmm. So are they going to say someone else took his phone and went for a drive?
Because that happens.
But no, they're sticking with that he had his devices. He went out for a drive and happened to be, I guess, in those areas, because that's where the evidence is going to point him to be. Irrefutable evidence is going to point him to be in those areas. It already does with the pinging of the cell phones. So
it's just an excuse. Like, okay, yeah, they know he was over there because of his cell phones. Now we have to find a reason why he'd be over there. Oh, maybe he couldn't sleep and he likes to drive at night.
Yeah. They're going to try and go after.
To me, it just sounds made up.
They're going to try and go after the cell phone triangulation. They're going to try and poke holes in that and say, well, it couldn't possibly be this, or it could be a doubt because this could have been an error here, or this could have been this or that. They're going to try and poke holes, create some doubt with that, because number one, cell phone triangulation is confusing for people who even understand it, and even more so for juries. So if we can create some confusion there simply because of inept understanding, that's really the strategy here. Let's confuse people who don't know any better is the strategy.
And it might work. That's the thing. It might actually work.
It might actually work. And that's why they're all pissed off about media talking about it. Because the second they say something stupid, we're all like, hey, that was really dumb. And and I hope every fucking person in Moscow hears it. Because it's insane. let's talk about some other insane defenses over time. There's the Twinkie defense. Dan White gave that one in 1978, the 1978 murders of San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk. It shook the nation. Man responsible, Dan White, was a former member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. At his trial, the defense attorney presented a unique argument suggesting that White's consumption of junk food, particularly Twinkies, was symptomatic of his severe depression. This was not to argue that the Twinkies caused his actions, but rather to highlight the compromised mental state. The media latched onto this aspect of the defense and dubbed it the Twinkie defense, a name that has since stuck in popular culture. While the defense itself might seem trivial or laughable, its implications were anything but. Using this argument of diminished capacity, White was convicted of voluntary manslaughter instead of first-degree murder. The Twinkie argument worked. The public's reaction was strong, leading to the White Night riots in San Francisco. The case and its outcome had a lasting impact on legal discussions about responsibility, mental health, and how they're addressed in the courtroom. And as we can tell from 1978 to now, we've made great strides there.
Right. Do you remember the Twinkie? Maybe you were too young for that, but I do remember using that as an excuse. Oh, I had a Twinkie, therefore.
You know, I always heard the terms Twinkie defense. I never understood what it was because I was not around in 78. But I do remember hearing that term being used. I just like never really knew what it meant. Now I just learned. I learned something new today.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. The more you know. The dog ate my homework defense. This is not just something the kids say or that. That's Andrew I can't even say the name.
That's a tough one. I don't know.
Zelinowski? There's like extra couple vowels and words in there. Andrew's defense during his murder trial in the UK was reminiscent of an oft-used child excuse that his dog had consumed his homework and he was at home during the crime's occurrence trying to retrieve it. That was the alibi. This alibi seems obviously humorous in its simplicity, but its utilization in a serious crime trial underscores the lengths to which individuals might go to establish innocence. Despite the peculiar nature of the excuse, it didn't hold up in court. The jury dismissed his claim, and he was convicted. The case serves as a testament to the intricate and sometimes bizarre narratives defendants might use to escape or weave to escape justice. There's a Simon McMillan accused of theft. This is in 87. Presenting one of the most unusual alibis, he claimed that he was under the spell of TV hypnosis shows during his crime. While not a murder, it remains noteworthy of its audacity. McMillan's defense hinged on the area that television could induce a state of suggestibility so profound that one could commit crimes without being aware. In a world where concerns about media's influence have always been rife, McMillan's defense pushed the boundaries about those fears. However, courts grounded in scientific reasoning didn't give credence to this narrative, further reinforcing the necessity for evidence-based defenses. I would really love to know who came up with some of these, if it's the attorney or if it was, like, I feel like in this case, it's the client saying, say this, and the attorney really has no choice at that point.
But I also feel like we've seen, and I'm very close to an attorney, so I'm not nailing attorneys here, but I feel like we've seen attorneys that would go to great lengths to proclaim whatever just for their client.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering, to me, that feels a little bit like an attorney trying to earn their money.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be creative, I guess, in some of these.
Kenneth, you do. And you've got to be a couple steps ahead of your client, too, at all times.
Here's one of my favorites. Kenneth Park's case. Nothing short of remarkable. Park had a well-documented history of sleep disorders. One night, he drove 20 kilometers to his in-law's home, assaulted both, and killed his mother-in-law. He then drove to a police station, confessed, but with a twist. He claimed he had done all this while sleepwalking. Medical experts supported his claims, pointing to a rare form sleep disorder. The jury faced a moral and legal dilemma. Can someone be held responsible for actions committed in a state they have no control over? Ultimately, Parks was acquitted, leading to global discussions about sleep disorders, legal responsibility, and where the two intersect.
Well, think about what's happened maybe in the last decade with the drug Ambien. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's been two decades now. Yeah. I can't even remember how long it's been, but my brother used to take Ambien and he would do some really weird shit.
Yeah.
Like 2 hours in on the drug. And I had taken it once and it just made me feel so completely weird and like having an out of body experience that I decided it wasn't worth it to me. Mm-hmm. And I never took it again and it expired. I got rid of it. But something happened to me. Like it was just like I had stepped outside of my body. And I was somehow asleep, but awake. It was just the weirdest. So, I can almost understand that to a point.
I mean, I think it can happen. I think it's extremely rare. Driving 20 kilometers seems like a bit much to use that argument. I can see maybe in the same home or something. But I don't know all the details of that case. Here, Bill Ramsey claims that a little bit more crazy, somewhat more of a out of a horror movie. During the 1980s in the UK, after a series of violent incidents, Bill Ramsey proclaimed that he occasionally transformed into a werewolf, losing control during these episodes. His claims are backed by sporadic and unpredictable violent outbursts, but no concrete evidence supported the supernatural aspect of his assertions. In 1989, after much public attention and media coverage, Ramsey underwent an exorcism, believed by some to rid him of the werewolf spirit. While his claims were never used as a formal defense in court, they added a chapter to the annals of bizarre explanations for violent behavior. Turning into a werewolf. I'd love, I guess it's about as great as some of the arguments that we heard in the Lori Daybell case, although no alibi was ever provided there. We just heard of bizarre beliefs and zombies and prophecies and this or that. I think it's right up there with fucking werewolf.
I would have to agree with that. If a werewolf exists, I kind of want to see it.
I'd like to see him turn into a werewolf. I mean,
yeah,
I'd say
that'd be kind of cool.
If he can turn into a werewolf, guess what? You get to be out of jail. I think if you're the judge that in that case, you're like, you know what? Here's the deal. Do it. Become the werewolf right now. You're out. We're going to put you in a cage, but it'd be like more like a zoo cage when we'll give you food and everything you need. And it won't be bad, but you got to do this. Otherwise you're going to the other jail where you don't drop the soap because someone may want to fuck a wolf.
I could get behind that.
a lot of people could probably get behind that.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.